last part of the book of
The book of Nahum is a book about God's judgment to the city of Nineveh of Assyria. Last week we looked at the attributes of our great God, His power, His amazing power, His goodness, His severity. We'll touch on more of that in just a moment. Chapters 2 and 3 of the book of Nahum, I think, give a vivid description of God's judgment against Nineveh. A couple of times in this section, God will say, "I am against thee, Nineveh." You know, in Romans chapter 8, verse 31, we read how that if God be for us, who can be against us? But if God's against us, you know, we can't stand. In Nahum 1 and verse 6, who can stand before His indignation, and who can abide in the fierceness of His anger? His fury is poured out like fire, and the rocks are thrown down by Him. We see God's will being done in these nations that we've been reading about, in Edom and Assyria. And God just speaks. He speaks His will into force and into being, and it's done. We don't want God to be against us, but that's what we see here in Nahum chapters 2 and 3. God is, "I'm against thee, O Nineveh." Just by way of review, Nahum's prophecy, the prophecy that was really a burden to Assyria, was going to be a relief to God's people. In chapter 1, in verses 14 and 15, in verse 14, there again, God would say to Nineveh, "I will make thy grave." But then to His people, in verse 15, "O Judah, keep thy solemn feast. The wicked's no more going to pass through you. You'll have relief." So in this prophecy, the very thing that relieved Israel was a burden, was a load, should have been and was a load to the people of Assyria. Again, by the way of review, God was going to make an utter end to Nineveh. In verse 8, He makes that statement. He says, "With an overrunning flood, He will make an utter end of the place thereof." And several times through this chapter, He'll just illustrate how that He's going to make a complete end to Nineveh of Assyria. In verse 9, He will make an utter end. "Affliction shall not rise up the second time. Nineveh, I'm going to take you down, and you're not going to make another peep. You're not going to rise up a second time, and I'll have to do it again. You know, I'm going to make an utter end to you." In verse 10, "While they are drunken as drunkards, they shall be devoured as stubble, fully dry." If you've ever been in the yard, maybe say, going to burn something like pine needles or just pine cones or sticks that are just dry. You know, they just go up in flames. "I'm going to make you, just devour you as dry stubble. I'll cut you down," verse 12. "Although I have afflicted thee, I will afflict thee no more," to Israel. But yet, in the middle of that verse, "yet thus shall they be cut down." In verse 15, "utterly cut off." At the end of chapter 2, in verse 13, He says at the end of that verse, and we'll talk more about this morning, "the voice of thy messenger shall no more be heard." We'll give what I think is a good example of one of the messengers of Assyria back in the book of Isaiah. But you're not going to be sending out any more messengers pronouncing doom against other nations, because "I'm going to bury you," God says to Assyria, to Nineveh. At the end of chapter 3 in verse 19, "there is no healing of thy bruise." You know, I'm going to give you a wound and you will not be healed from that wound. Just want to briefly make some, just show you some slides of application. We'll look at these again at the end of the lesson. But I'd just like to have you keep this application in mind as we study through and read through chapters 2 and 3 of the book of Nahum. God, as we've seen, you know, He's ruling among the nations, like, say, with Edom, "I'll bring you down," in the book of Obadiah, to Nineveh, "I'll make your grave," to Assyria. You know, we'll look at a couple of passages in the book of Isaiah where God is speaking about Assyria, and, you know, He's saying, "I'm going to send him here or there." King Sennacherib, you know, I'll do this to him, and, you know, this will happen to him, he'll fall. And certainly, you know, as God would tell King Nebuchadnezzar in the book of Daniel, you know, the Most High rules in the kingdoms of men. I'd like us to understand and recognize and remember that God rules among the nations. And so that when we see passages that are written to us in the New Testament, passages dealing with prayer, you know, be anxious for nothing, but in prayer, supplication, let your request be made known to God. Just a number of different passages we'll look at in the book of Hebrews and Peter. When we're down and we need help and we're praying to our God, remember the very God that just spoke His word to Edom or to Assyria or to whomever, and what He said happened. That is the God that is backing these verses that we have. You know, be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your request be made known to God. The God that we're reading about in Obadiah and Nahum, that is the God that is backing that promise. Just give some background of Assyria. You know, here Nahum is a judgment to Nineveh, the capital of Assyria. Just give a little bit of background to Assyria, just to help us keep in mind the kind of nation God is dealing with here. And it would have been neat if the schedule didn't allow it, and things that were I wanted to go a little bit longer in Obadiah, and Jeff was gone this morning, and so we had to rearrange the schedule. But we originally planned to have the book of Jonah before Nahum. That would have been nice to have had that. But Jonah, possibly a century or more, 100, 150 years before Nahum, he describes a Nineveh back in the book of Jonah that Jeff will cover. He describes a Nineveh that obeyed God, that believed God. Look back with me to Jonah chapter 3 and verse 5. Jonah chapter 3 and verse 5. You remember Jonah went through the city of Nineveh, and he was finally preaching what God led him to say to those people. And it says in verse 5, "So the people of Nineveh believed God and proclaimed a fast." And so then in verse 10, "God saw their works, that they turned from their evil way. God repented of the evil. I'm not going to destroy you, Nineveh." So a century or so before Nahum that we're reading about this morning, Jonah was dealing with a Nineveh that did listen to God. Now we're looking at a Nineveh that has become proud. I'd like us to look at a couple of passages that illustrate that in the book of Isaiah, Isaiah 10 and Isaiah 36 and 37. And again, this is the type of Nineveh that we're dealing with in the book of Nahum. In Isaiah chapter 10, in verses 5 through 15, let me just read just a little bit there, just to give us a picture, a background, a setting of what we're looking at here in Nahum. And as we read through this, recognize that, notice the pride of this Assyrian king about what all that he thinks that he's doing to Israel. But God is using him. God has a son, Israel, that he wants to give a spanking. And so he's going to use Assyria to do it. And God is using Assyria. But the Assyrian king acts as if, you know, all of the things that are going on, you know, I'm just going to topple over Israel just like I've done all these other nations. But this pride, Isaiah 10, verse 5, beginning, "O Assyrian, the rod of mine anger and the staff in their hand is mine indignation." Of course, the Lord is saying this. "I will send him against a hypocritical nation, and against the people of my wrath will I give him a charge, to take the spoil, to take the prey, and to tread them down like the mire of the streets. Howbeit, he meaneth not so, neither doth his heart think so, but it is in his heart to destroy and cut off nations, not a few. For he saith, are not my princes altogether kings?" You know, the lowest rulers of my people, the princes, you know, they're like kings, maybe to the kings of the nations, you know, just this proud attitude about his people. "Is not Carno as Carchemish? Is not Hamath as Arpad? Is not Samaria as Damascus?" Here are all these nations that I've run over already. Well, Israel's going to be just like them. I've taken them. I'll take Israel. It's going to be no problem. As my hand hath found the kingdoms of the idols, and whose graven images did excel them of Jerusalem and Samaria, shall I not, as I have done unto Samaria and her idols, so do to Jerusalem and her idols? So God's going to deal with Jerusalem because of their sins. He's going to use Assyria to do it. But the Assyrian king thinks that he's just got this great power. He's going to run through Israel just like he's done all these other nations. Wherefore it shall come to pass that when the Lord hath performed his whole work upon Mount Zion and on Jerusalem, after God's through with Assyria, I will punish the fruit of the stout heart of the king of Assyria and the glory of his high looks. For he saith, by the strength of my hand have I done it, by my wisdom, for I am prudent. And I have removed the bounds of the people, and have robbed their treasures, and have put down the inhabitants like a valiant man. And my hand hath found as a nest the riches of the people, and as one gathereth eggs that are left. You know, as someone just goes in, maybe someone who's raising birds, or maybe a hunter or whatever, just goes in and just reaches up into a nest and takes the eggs that he wants. You know, here's Assyria. As my hand hath found as a nest the riches of the people, and as one gathereth eggs that are left, have I gathered all the earth, and there is none that moved his wing, or opened his mouth, or peeped. Shall the axe boast itself against him that heweth therewith? Assyria, I'm using you. You're going to boast against me? You're going to act proudly? Or shall the saw magnify itself against him that shaketh it? As if a rod should shake itself against them that lift it? Or as the staff should lift up itself, as if it were no wood? You know, so here we see this attitude of the Assyrian king. Another example of this kind of attitude in Isaiah chapter 36. Look with me to Isaiah chapter 36, and we'll tell a little bit of the story there, what's going on, and read just a little bit. But in Isaiah chapter 36, and here, I don't know if in Isaiah 10 he was referring to Sennacherib, maybe he was, but here in Isaiah 36 and 37, he points out Sennacherib of Assyria by name. And by the way, here's King Sennacherib that we'll be reading about. He had a son, Esarhaddon. And then he had a son, Ashurbanipal, which is the one that took the city of Thebes of Egypt that we'll be looking at in the book of Nahum shortly. But in Isaiah chapter 36, it says in verse 1, "Now it came to pass in the 14th year of King Hezekiah that Sennacherib, king of Assyria, came up against all the defense cities of Judah and took them. And the king of Assyria sent Rabshakeh from Lachish to Jerusalem." So here's Sennacherib of Assyria. He sends his messenger, Rabshakeh, to Hezekiah and to the people at Jerusalem. And Rabshakeh begins basically telling them, you just need to give up. You know, don't think that you're going to be able to lean on Egypt for support. Don't let Hezekiah deceive you into thinking that God's going to help you. I mean, God's the one that sent me, he says. He claims there in verse 10. "And am I now come up without the Lord against this land to destroy it? The Lord hath said to me, go up against this land to destroy it." So Rabshakeh is saying, you know, just give up, basically. You know, don't trust in the Lord. Don't trust in these nations. Don't think that you've got a way out. You know, all of these nations had their gods. The Lord's not going to help you, Hezekiah. And so during this event, down in verse 11, there were several of the servants of the king of Hezekiah that were saying, "Hey, Rabshakeh, you know, talk in the Syrian language. We know that. Don't talk in the language of the Jews that everyone in the city can hear." And then Rabshakeh, it's like he just starts talking louder to, you know, and he says, "Well, I'm sent to those people that are on that wall." So he begins talking in the Jews' language. And, you know, just tell, don't trust in Hezekiah. Don't trust in the Lord. And so the servants of Hezekiah go back in verse 22 of Isaiah 36, and they come to Hezekiah with their clothes torn. "Hezekiah, here's what they said. Here's what Rabshakeh said." And it came to pass in verse chapter 37, when King Hezekiah heard it, that he rent his clothes and covered himself with sackcloth, and he went to the house of the Lord. And so he sends word to Isaiah the prophet. And Isaiah the prophet lets Hezekiah know, you know, don't worry. You know, in verse 7, he says, "Behold, I will send a blast upon Sennacherib, Hezekiah, I'll send a blast upon him, and he shall hear a rumor and return to his own land, and I will cause him to fall by the sword of his own hand, in his own land. And so in this story in chapter 37, that night, or one night, God sends an angel into the host of the Assyrians and kills 185,000 soldiers of the Assyrian army. And then in verse 37, so Sennacherib, king of Assyria, departed and went and returned and dwelt at Nineveh. And it came to pass, as he was worshiping in the house of Nisroch his god, and when I was reading that, I believe it was this morning again, I was looking at that just amazed. Sennacherib, you just got through leaving siege against Jerusalem, and an angel wiped out 185,000 of your soldiers, and you're going back to your god? It came to pass that he was worshiping in the house of Nisroch his god, that Adrammelech and Sharezer his son smote him with a sword, and they escaped into the land of Armenia. And Esarhaddon his son reigned in his stead. So Sennacherib was murdered by his own sons, and one of his another son, Esarhaddon, reigned in his stead. But here's the type of Assyria I think we're dealing with in Nahum, a proud Assyria, an oppressive Assyria, not like the one that Jonah dealt with in his day. But again, just back to one of our applications, one of our lessons. You know, here's God to these nations, whether it's Edom and Obadiah or Assyria and Nahum. You know, God, Hezekiah, don't worry about that. I'm going to send a blast against him. He's going to go back to his own land, and he's going to die in his land. And it happened. You know, here's God dealing with the nations of the world, just getting his will done. God wants something done, it's going to happen. How God does it, I don't know. But he just wills it done, speaks it into place. You know, the very God that said, let there be light, is the one we're dealing with. And we see in the New Testament, we have the backdrop of the Old Testament, and God's dealing with the nations, and we see his awesome and great power. And I would like us to be impressed with that. In the book of Nahum, let's begin looking at that. And I'm going to switch the version that I read from. Normally, I read and have the King James. We'll be looking at from the New American Standard here in Nahum chapter 2. In Nahum chapter 2, the first couple of verses, here in this reading, you remember something I forgot to mention, maybe you remember, but I'll go ahead and mention it. Back in Isaiah chapter 36, I believe it was, Isaiah chapter 36, remember Rabshakeh that came up to King Hezekiah, to Jerusalem, to Hezekiah, and was just taunting them. One of the things that he said to them is, my master Sennacherib, it was him, in chapter 36, he's got, I'll give you 2,000 of his horses if you can find men to put on these 2,000 horses. And one of the least of my master's servants will destroy them. Israel, I'll give you all of this armament, these horses. Put men on them. It's not going to help. You know, back there in chapter 36, he was saying, give up. You know, you're going down, Israel. But here in chapter 2, back in Nahum chapter 2, look at how the tables are turned and how that God, you know, the Sennacherib, the Assyrian kings, were acting so proudly and as if they were sovereign. They were just doing whatever they wanted to do. But really, in the book of Nahum, we see that God truly is sovereign. And look at, and again, in chapters 2 and 3, just so dramatic language and beautiful language. I know he's talking about destruction, but the poetry of this language in Nahum chapters 2 and 3, but, you know, God here, you know, Sennacherib, Rabshakeh, challenged Israel to get ready. Here, God is challenging Nineveh to get ready and strengthen themselves. It's not going to help Nineveh, but God is against you. People have plundered. You've plundered God's people, but I'm going to restore their majesty. Again, in the book of Nahum, there's judgment to Nineveh, comfort to God's people. Chapter 2, verses 1 and 2. The one who scatters has come up against you. Nineveh, I take it he's talking about Babylon. Babylon is coming up against you. The one that scatters has come up against you. Man the fortress. Watch the road. Strengthen your back. Summon all your strength. For the Lord will restore the splendor of Jacob like the splendor of Israel, even though devastators have devastated them and destroyed their vine branches. Get ready, Nineveh. It's coming. Destruction is coming. Do what you want. Man your positions. But I'm going to bury you. In verses 3 through 9, Nineveh is pictured, Nineveh's enemy, Babylon, is pictured as racing through the streets. Just, you know, and I think of, and the people of Nineveh, it sounds like he's talking about the people defending Nineveh. They're racing to the walls to man the fortress. And I think of, when I read the language that we'll see in just a moment, I think of like the Keystone Cops or something. You know, here's the enemy rushing in to destroy, and Nineveh, the forces of Nineveh are just bewildered, and they're just going all over, just trying in vain to save themselves. The gates of the river, we'll see, are pictured as being opened upon Nineveh, and the palace is dissolved in verse 6. I think you may probably just use in dramatic language about, you know, the forces are just coming in and wiping Nineveh out. The maidens of Nineveh are led away captive, moaning and beating their chest. And the enemy, Babylon, I take it, has taken the spoils of Nineveh in verses 8 and 9, the silver and gold. And he says, there is no end to the treasures taken. Remember that in just a moment. And as we read through these verses in verses 3 through 9, just remember that what Nineveh, what Assyria has dished out to other nations, is coming back on them. In verse 3, the shields of his mighty men, the oppressor, the enemy of Nineveh, the shields of his mighty men are colored red. The warriors are dressed in scarlet. The chariots are enveloped in flashing steel when he prepared to march, and the cypress spears are brandished. The chariots race madly in the streets. They rush wildly in the squares. Their appearance is like torches. They dash to and fro like lightning flashes. He remembers his nobles. They stumble in their march. They hurry to her wall, and the mantlet is set up. The gates of the rivers are open, and the palace is dissolved, and it is fixed. She is stripped. She is carried away, and her maidens are moaning like the sound of doves beating on their breast. Though Nineveh was like a pool of water throughout her days, you know, just calm, and now they are fleeing. Stop, stop! But no one turns back. You can imagine a city possibly under attack, and maybe the commanders are telling their people, you know, not to flee, but no one's listening. You know, the oppressor just coming in, just wiping things out. Plunder the silver, plunder the gold, for there is no limit to the treasure, wealth from every kind of desirable object. So here, just as Nineveh, just as Assyria sacked, as we'll see, Thebes and other places, other nations, Nineveh is being sacked. So God is taking care of Nineveh. Judgment to Nineveh. The burden of Nineveh. Just a secular reference. Again in verse 9. Plunder the silver, plunder the gold, for there is no limit to the treasure. Wealth from every kind of desirable object. There was a cylinder, the Rossum cylinder, as they call it. And I've got a link if you want to go to the PowerPoint slides, download those and take a look at the link. Look at this. There was a clay cylinder, Ashurbanipal. Remember, there was Sennacherib and Esarhaddon and Ashurbanipal, his son, grandson, Sennacherib's grandson. He chronicled his exploits and wrote them on this 10-sided cylinder in cuneiform writing. So here there was a translation of this done. But in this Rossum cylinder, and again, I've got the link on those slides if you want to go. And there's a man, Daniel David Luckinville. He's got just a huge PDF document that you can download and read about the ancient records of Assyria. But in this record, Ashurbanipal makes this comment in one reference, number 767, that I guess Luckinville designates it as that reference, 767. He says, "In joy and gladness I enter the royal harem, the splendid seat, the bond of royalty, wherein Sennacherib, the father of the father, my begetter, spent his days as crown prince and as king, in which Esarhaddon, the father who begat me, was born, grew up, and exercised the rulership over Assyria." So here's Ashurbanipal, And he says about Thebes, the city of Thebes in Egypt that we'll read about in just a moment here in chapter 3. And this is in reference 778 of these this Rossum cylinder. That city, Ni or No, or as we might say, Thebes of Egypt, my hands captured in its entirety with the aid of Asur and Ishtar, maybe his gods. Silver, gold, precious stones, the goods of his palace, all there was, brightly colored and linen garments, great horses, the people, male and female, two tall obelisks made of shining electrum, whose weight was 2,500 talents, which stood by the gate of the temple. I removed from their positions and carried them off to Assyria. Heavy plunder and countless I carried away from thee against Egypt and Ethiopia. I waged bitter warfare and established my might. With a full hand I returned in safety to Nineveh, my royal city. So here's Ashurbanipal of Nineveh, of Assyria, going into this Thebes of Egypt and sacking it. But the very kind of things that Nineveh did to other nations was being done to them. Babylon, I take it here in verse 9 of chapter 2, verse 9, is plundering Nineveh's silver, Nineveh's gold. There's no limit to the treasure. What Assyria did to Thebes, Babylon is doing to them. At God's will, God's order. Back in chapter 2 of the book of Nahum, verses 10 through 12, the heart of Nineveh, I picture, is melting over this Babylonian onslaught against the city, or that would happen against the city. It's my understanding that the lion was the national symbol of Assyria. Maybe they had it in relief work or images or whatever in their city. But God is chiding Nineveh. It looks like here in verses 10 through 12, chiding Nineveh, you know, where's the lion? You know, you're a lion, Assyria? Well, where is that? Where'd that lion go? That lion's not standing against Babylon. Verse 10, she is emptied. She is desolate and waste. Hearts are melting and knees knocking. Also anguish is in the whole body and all their faces are grown pale. You know, the strength and courage is draining from Nineveh, the soldiers of Assyria. They're emptied. Where is the den of the lions and the feeding place of the young lions? Where is the lion, lioness, and lion's cub? Where are the lion, lioness, and lion's cub prowled with nothing to disturb them? The lion tore through enough for his cubs, killed enough for his lionesses, and filled the lairs with prey and his den with torn flesh. You know, that once was a lion, he did his will. Assyria, you once, I take it, you, or maybe that's the point here. Assyria, you once did your will. Where'd that lion go? In chapter 2 and verse 13, God cries against Nineveh. Nineveh, I am against you. You know, it's time for judgment to come. You know, back in a previous lesson, we looked at how that God was one time speaking to Abram, and he spoke about how that in regard to the Amorites, the cup of their iniquity was not yet full. Well, Assyria's iniquity is full, and God's dealing with them. God is against them, and he's sending a nation against them. In verse 13, behold, I am against you, declares the Lord of hosts. I will burn up her chariots in smoke. A sword will devour your young lions. Maybe these young soldiers or whatever, no bravery there. The sword is going to devour them. I will cut off your prey from the land, and no longer will the voice of your messengers be heard. You remember that Rabshakeh? That Sennacherib sent to Jerusalem, the messenger that he sent. Don't depend on the Lord. Don't depend on Egypt. You know, you're not going to stand, Israel. Maybe that's the kind of thing he's saying here. I'm going to cut you off, Nineveh. No longer will the voice of your messengers be heard. You're not going to be sending anyone out to oppress anyone else again. I'm making an end of you, Assyria. In chapter 3, in the first three verses, I take it Nineveh is described as a bloody city. But here, blood is happening to them. God is executing his judgment to them. And carnage is coming to the bloody city. Heaps of slain are in the city. And they were going to suffer as they have caused others to suffer. They would suffer. And so look with me to chapter 3. Let's read the first three verses. Woe to the bloody city, completely full of lies and pillage. Her prey never departs. The noise of the whip, the noise of the rattling of the wheel, galloping horses and bounding chariots, horsemen charging, swords flashing, spears gleaming, and countless dead bodies. They stumble over the dead bodies. Nineveh, you're laid waste. You're laid waste at the power of God. In Matthew chapter 26, in verse 52, Matthew chapter 26, in verse 52, Jesus made a statement to Peter. When Peter tried to defend the Lord, he said, "Put your sword back into its place, for all those who take up the sword shall perish by the sword." Nineveh, you're going to live by the sword? You're going to destroy others? Now it's your turn. You will be destroyed. In verses 4 through 7, chapter 3, verses 4 through 7, again, God is showing how that He's against them and they're laid waste. Verse 4, all because of the many harlotries of the harlot, the charming one, the mistress of sorceries. He's calling Nineveh this harlot, who sells nation by her harlotries and families by her sorceries. "Behold, I am against you, declares the Lord of hosts, and I will lift up your skirts over your face and show to the nations your nakedness and to the kingdoms your disgrace. I will throw filth on you and make you vile and set you up as a spectacle. And it will come about that all who see you will shrink from you and say, Nineveh is devastated. Who will grieve for her? Where will I seek comforters for you?" The comforter is not going to come, Nineveh. In verses 8 through 10 of chapter 3, here's where we see this thieves of Egypt, this Noaman, as some other translations may say. And God is looking at Nineveh and reminding them of what Assyria had done to thieves of Egypt, how that they had sacked that city. And God is calling upon them to answer the question, are you any better than them? You sacked them, but now is coming a time that you will be sacked. In verse 8 through 10, are you better than Noaman, or Thebes, which was situated by the rivers of Nile? And notice how protected it looked like Thebes was, but Nineveh just marched right in and took them. Are you better than Noaman, which was situated by the waters of the Nile, with waters surrounding her, whose rampart was the sea, whose wall consisted of the sea? Ethiopia was her might, and Egypt too, without limits. Put and Lubim, some other nations, were among her helpers. Yet she became an exile. She went into captivity. And also her small children were dashed to pieces at the head of every street. They cast lots for her honorable men, and all her great men were bound with fetters. So Assyria, you marched in to Thebes and took them as nothing. Back in chapter 2, verse 7, you remember how that God said to Nineveh, talking about Nineveh, she's stripped, she's carried away, her handmaids are moaning like the sound of doves beating their breast. You know, Nineveh is, things are happening to Nineveh that they did to others like Thebes. In chapter 3, verses 11 through 18, again, just showing a picture of the lack of power that Assyria has. They'll be like drunken men looking for strength. They'll be like, and he gives some picturesque language here, like a man, like a giant, maybe going to a fig tree and shaking it and the ripe fruit falling into his mouth. You know, that's the way the Babylonians are going to be to you, Nineveh. They're just going to shake you and you'll be gone. God calls upon them to prepare, to draw water for the siege and fortify their refuge. And then he it's like he's taunting them about their nobles, their rulers and their soldiers. Let's look here in verses 11 through 18. You too will become a drunk. You will be hidden. You too will search for a refuge from the enemy. All your fortifications are fig trees with ripe fruit. When shaken, they fall into the eater's mouth. Behold, your people are women in your midst. And I take it, like the passage in 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 7, where he's talking to husbands honoring their wife as unto the weaker vessel, so that your prayers are not hindered. You know, we don't normally think of we don't think of women as being like a harsh soldier. And I take it that's the kind of he's belittling the soldiers of Nineveh. you know, your soldiers are just a bunch of women, in with you know, not as we would think of as this brute kind of a soldier that Assyria would have in relation to God. That's what they had no strength. Verse 13, behold, your women are in your midst. Behold, your people are women in your midst. The gates of your land are open wide to your enemies. Fire consumes your gate bars. Draw for yourselves water for the seas. Strengthen your fortifications. Go into the clay and tread the mortar. Take hold of the brick mold. It's my understanding some would, maybe when a city was under siege, they would try to reinforce the wall, thicken the wall, build up the wall, you know, against the enemy. You know, go and make more brick. try to protect yourself. There, fire will consume you. The sword will cut you down. It will consume you as the locust does. Think of a swarm of locusts. Remember in Egypt, the locusts just coming in and devouring the land under the plague of Egypt. Multiply yourselves like the creeping locust. Multiply yourself like the swarming locust. You have increased your traitors more than the stars of heaven. The creeping locust strips and flies away. Your guardsmen are like the swarming locust. Your marshals are like the hordes of grasshoppers. Settling in the stone walls on a cold day, the sun rises and they flee. all of your soldiers, your marshals, your guardsmen, they're like these bugs on a cold that go to a refuge on a wall and it's cold. The sun rises and you see they fly away. That's what your soldiers are like, Nineveh. Just a bunch of bugs flying off into the blue. And the place where they are is not known. Verse 18, your shepherds are sleeping, O king of Assyria. Can you imagine a shepherd having a flock? And just imagine the picture. The shepherd is snoozing and the wolf is coming in and having his way with all of the sheep, just ripping and tearing and eating, and they're scattering. Your shepherds are sleeping, O king of Assyria. Your nobles are lying down. Your people are scattered on the mountains, and there is no one to regather them. Everyone's running. Stop, stop. People keep running. There is no relief for your breakdown. Well, and there is no one to regather them. In verse 19, Nineveh is suffering terribly, and he's just stating a fact that all of the people that hear of what goes on to Nineveh, they're applauding the destruction that happened. God's just making a record of what people will do. There is no relief for your breakdown. Your wound is incurable. All who hear about you will clap their hands over you. For on whom has not your evil passed continually? Just again, looking at some applications. Anyone have comments before we look at these applications again? Like in Isaiah 10, God is just making a parallel between the attitude of the nations here that we're reading about, and how that they, you know, I might say, in application of what you said, I might say that they're not recognizing that God is able to do anything against them. They're not recognizing their responsibility toward God and their obligations toward God. And what about us, our nation? What about, do we recognize the power of God and what God can do? Or do we just go on blindly or ignoring His Word? And in that light, just thinking, and I just want to move a little closer so that I can see. I don't have the notes that I have on the screen on my notes in my hand. I just have them on the PowerPoint. But just thinking about the power of God as He's ruling among these nations. Remember, like as Scott would say, the warning that the kind of God that we're dealing with. But like, you know, we've seen in Obadiah, Edom, I'll bring you down. And here in Nahum, I'll make your grave, Nineveh. To Assyria, you know, I'll send him to my nation to punish them. And then I'll punish him. King Sennacherib, I'll send a blast upon him. I will cause him to fall. You know, so God is dealing with these nations. And this is the God that we have. The God that said in Daniel chapter 4, King Nebuchadnezzar had to recognize and understand that the Most High, God, rules in the kingdoms of men and gives it to whomsoever He will. Sets up over at the basest of men. God can take Edom down, Nineveh down, Judah down, whatever He wants. And we need to recognize that's the God that we're dealing with. And so all of these passages in the New Testament, like in Philippians 4 that we referenced earlier, when we're praying to God for help, or in Hebrews chapter 4 and verse 16, when it talks about how that, you know, we can call upon God. Jesus knows the kind of things that we've gone through. Or in Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 6, when he says, "Let your conversation be without covetousness, and be content with such things as you have. For he hath said, I will never leave thee nor forsake thee, so that we may boldly say, the Lord is my helper, and I will not fear what man shall do unto me." Just remember, the kind of God that we're praying to is the God that just simply had his way in this world. And as he needed to, not that, again, Ezekiel 33 verse 11, God isn't glad at the destruction of anyone, but there'll come a time when he will judge him, and he judged Edom or Nineveh or his own people, Judah. But the God that just simply speaks his word and his will is done among the nations, that's the God that we're dealing with. In 1 Peter chapter 5 verse 7, casting all your care upon him, for he cares for you. Just remember the awesome power of our God, and let's bow to him as we have time in this world. Thank you for your comments.